Part 4. Relational Healing. Traumatized human beings recover in the context of relationships. With families, loved ones, AA meetings, veterans organization, religious communities, or professional therapists. The role of these relationships is to provide physical and emotional safety, including safety from feeling shamed, admonished, or judged, and to bolster the courage to tolerate, face, and process the reality of what happened. Bessel van der Kolk. Four Essentials of Quality Relationships. Pete Walker, author of Complex PTSD, From Surviving to Thriving, describes four qualities that he believes are essential to the development of trust and subsequent relational healing. 1. Empathy. Feeling truly heard and understood by the other person is a fundamental element of therapeutic human connection. Many people on the CPTSD spectrum have suffered greatly because emotionally immature caregivers were unable to display empathy to them as a child. 2. Authentic vulnerability. This refers to our ability to be open and vulnerable about our emotions with another person. If we didn't see this being role modeled by our caregivers growing up, it makes sense that practicing it might feel uncomfortable. If you're very disconnected from your emotions, it might even feel out of reach. Lacking authentic vulnerability with caregivers may also mean that our cravings for this type of connection are intensified in adulthood. This longing could lead to behaviors such as oversharing early in relationships in an attempt to speed up the process of connection. When talking of his experience with his therapist who demonstrated her authentic vulnerability to him, Walker notes, "I needed to experience all that the less than shiny bits of me were acceptable to another human being. Seeing that she was comfortable with and accepting of her own unhappy feelings eventually convinced me that she really was not disgusted by mine." Walker calls the opposite of authentic vulnerability emotional perfectionism, the inauthentic display of always being okay. 3. Dialogicality. The next essential quality for relational healing is dialogicality, the equal exchange of speaking and listening that takes place within a relationship. If one person tends to dominate the conversations, always bringing the focus back to themselves, the other will inevitably end up feeling unseen and unfulfilled by the relationship. The lack of balance can create frustration, resentment, or even a sense of isolation within the relationship. In healthy dialogical interactions, both people actively listen and respond, showing genuine curiosity and empathy for each other's perspectives. This balance helps build trust, strengthens the bond, and ensures that both people feel seen, supported, and fulfilled. 4. Collaborative relationship repair. Walker notes that this refers to the capacity to not only survive, but also grow closer from the inevitable breaks in attunement that are existential in every relationship of substance. He explains, "I believe one of the most common reasons clients terminate therapy prematurely is the gradual accumulation of dissatisfactions that they do not feel safe enough to bring up or talk about. How sad it is that all kinds of promising relationships wither and die for want of the ability to safely work through differences and conflict." As well as setting extremely high standards for themselves, people with CPTSD tend to project high standards onto others. Why? Here are some possible reasons. High standards can be a way of trying to control our environment and relationships to prevent further harm or disappointment. Trauma survivors might internalize the harsh criticism or neglect they experienced, leading to hypervigilance about their behavior and the behavior of those around them. A history of inconsistent caregiving can make it difficult to trust others, leading to heightened expectations as a way to test others' reliability. High expectations might also reflect an unmet need for recognition, both for themselves and in their relationships. They might overachieve or expect others to do so as a way of proving their worth. While high standards can sometimes drive personal growth, they can also put significant strain on relationships. When others fail to meet high standards, it leads to repeated feelings of disappointment. Over time, this can breed resentment, frustration, and emotional distance. Here are some ways to address this. Cultivate self-compassion to ease internal pressure. Recognize that mistakes are a natural part of growth and allow yourself and others the grace to be imperfect. Regularly acknowledge your own accomplishments and those of others. Understand that high expectations of others are closely related to splitting. Finally, learn how to recognize and manage splitting to reduce its impact on your relationships. When people let you down, it can feel especially painful if you've learned to hold high expectations of others as a form of self-protection. Unmet expectations can even feel catastrophic, as though they confirm past fears that others will ultimately disappoint. This makes it harder to distinguish between a one-time mistake and a genuine pattern. A trauma survivor notes, "I split on my partner all the time. What helps me is reviewing a list I made of all the things I appreciate about him. Journaling about my thoughts and stories helps me reframe them. When I'm splitting, my mind is super distorted to the negative, and I have to remind myself to see the bigger picture. I also find the TIPP skill from DBT very helpful." If someone has repeatedly crossed your boundaries, make sure to reiterate what those boundaries are and why they're important to you. When you're led to believe that your needs don't matter, setting boundaries in adulthood can feel foreign and uncomfortable. It might feel easier to cut people off than to deal with the inevitable discomfort involved in collaborative relationship repair. But here's the thing. Healthy relationships involve an ongoing conflict-repair cycle. Problems are an integral part of all relationships. If you've communicated well and someone's behavior still consistently falls short of your needs or boundaries, it's okay to reassess their role in your life. Want more guidance on this? In the Thinking Slow method, we explore the nonviolent communication model as a step-by-step framework for setting boundaries. We also take a deep dive into the practice of setting healthy boundaries in the 30-day mental health program, our audio-based guide to cultivating resilience and mastering your emotions. Other factors impacting relationships. Mental anxiety. As noted, this refers to unhelpful thinking patterns such as catastrophizing and threat scanning, which arise from a trauma survivor's reduced sense of safety. As Van der Kolk explains, faulty alarm systems lead to blow-ups or shutdowns in response to innocuous comments or facial expressions. Yes, you need to detect whether somebody is getting upset with you, but if your amygdala goes into overdrive, you may become chronically scared that people hate you, or you may feel they are out to get you. Experiencing these thinking patterns and associated emotions can lead to relationship conflict and instability when we lack the skills to deal with them effectively. Feeling like you're completely different to others. Many traumatized people feel chronically out of sync with others. It can be helpful to remind yourself that there are lots of people out there who feel this way. In the Thinking Slow method, we call this the disconnected story. A simple cognitive strategy for overcoming it is to start focusing more on similarities between you and others. Exaggerating differences can be seen as a subconscious defense mechanism to shield yourself from connection and vulnerability. Another common story is the unworthy story, which sounds like, "I'm fundamentally flawed." When you believe that you're unworthy, it may be difficult to accept love or care from others, leading to self-sabotaging behaviors, isolation, or difficulties with trust. The abandonment story is also common. This sounds like, "No matter how good things seem with someone, it's not going to last." If you fear abandonment, you might push people away preemptively, become overly clingy, or constantly test the boundaries of relationships. This can lead to a cycle of instability and emotional exhaustion. Becoming aware of your stories is a transformative step towards enhancing your relationships. It allows you to recognize when a particular narrative is triggering a cycle of unhelpful thinking, helping you avoid getting caught in an emotional roller coaster. Attachment styles. All of these struggles we've described are summarized in attachment theory as the fearful avoidant attachment style, also known as the disorganized attachment style. There are four main attachment styles that have been studied by researchers. Our attachment style shows up in our relationships with caregivers, friends, romantic partners, and even colleagues. Here are the fundamental differences between the attachment styles. Secure attachment. Comfortable with closeness and distance. Anxious attachment. Finds distance difficult. Avoidant attachment. Finds closeness difficult. Fearful avoidant attachment. Finds closeness and distance difficult. Relationships are hard work for everyone, but they're particularly challenging for people on the CPTSD spectrum. However, they're also the greatest source of our well-being. The longest-running study on happiness found that the quality of our social connections is the strongest predictor of our overall sense of well-being. If you're going to make an investment in your mental health, we'd argue a top priority needs to be improving the quality of your relationships. Connecting with other trauma survivors. Connecting with people with shared experiences is particularly helpful for healing as it's conducive to empathy. One trauma survivor commented, "Making my trauma non-existent is impossible, but I have found a means to making a meaningful purpose through it. Advocacy, volunteering, and helping other victims of trauma in even the most minute form lightens the weight of my trauma, gives me hope, and ultimately allows me to take back the power over my own recovery." Our free social connection planner outlines apps and websites for peer support, plus meetings and support groups. Find a link to it in our ebook. Healing through others. A trauma survivor asked their therapist, "Do you think it's impossible to be loved by others until you love yourself?" "No," she said very sincerely. "Long story short, my answer is no." I think that statement means well because it encourages you to focus investment into yourself. But I think more often it's taken out of context and does more harm than good. Sometimes we can find love for ourselves within us, and sometimes it's recognized through other people. Sometimes we need that love from others to help us find it in ourselves. So no, I don't think someone needs to wholly love themselves to be able to receive it from others. This sentence is worth repeating. Sometimes we need that love from others to help us find it in ourselves. It's important to remember that you don't have to be fully healed before seeking connection or dating. Relationships can be a source of healing. offering support and understanding as you grow together. Accepting love can help us love ourselves. Cultivating healthy, loving, trusting relationships helps us heal chronic shame. For people with CPTSD, romantic relationships can often trigger symptoms the most. The vulnerability that comes with love often brings up past wounds, resulting in emotional dysregulation. This can make relationships feel overwhelming, but it's crucial to remember that healing often occurs within the context of relationships. Supportive connections create opportunities for re-experiencing love and safety, helping to rewire the brain's trauma responses. Improving your relationships through the upward spiral. Interestingly, working on your mental well-being could result in you feeling more sociable. It's been found that compared with people experiencing a neutral mood, people experiencing positive mood show greater sociability, sense of connection, self-disclosure, trust in others, and compassion. Plus, the more time we devote to generating positive emotions in ourselves, the more pleasant our interactions with others become. Psychologist Barbara Fredrickson, a leading researcher in the field of positive emotions, labels this the upward spiral of positive emotions and health. Her research suggests social connection is a key factor in happiness and is associated with changes in our vagus nerve, an important component of the parasympathetic nervous system associated with relaxation. Fredrickson carried out a study exploring this with Bethany Koch and colleagues in 2013. Half of the study participants attended a 6-week loving-kindness meditation course. In the course, they practiced cultivating positive feelings of love, compassion, and goodwill towards themselves and others. For 2 months, participants in both groups reported their meditation, prayer, or solo spiritual activity, their emotional experiences, and their social interactions within the last day. Their vagal tone, the activity of their vagus nerve, was assessed twice, once at the beginning and once at the end of the study. The findings suggested that positive emotions, positive social connections, and vagal tone does indeed give rise to an upward spiral dynamic. They found that greater positive emotions prompted people to see themselves as more socially connected. Over time, as moments of positive emotions and positive social connections increased, vagal tone also improved. Fredrickson explains, "The daily moments of connection that people feel with others emerge as the tiny engines that drive the upward spiral between positivity and health." The Positive Emotions Journal in the Mental Well-Being Toolkit is designed to help you intentionally focus on and amplify positive emotions. For those with CPTSD, journaling can be especially helpful. By shifting attention toward positive emotions and experiences, the journal helps to counterbalance the brain's tendency to focus on distressing thoughts and memories. Improving connection through imaginal nurturing. Research shows that we can obtain the benefits of secure attachment that we didn't have early on through others in adulthood. This can be done through both real face-to-face contact or in our imagination. Amazingly, both are just as effective for rewiring our brain. Our brain doesn't know the difference between imagined and real scenarios. That's why it's possible for our physiology to change just by imagining an experience. A trauma survivor shares their experience on imaginal nurturing. "My therapist suggested making up an imaginary dad and creating memories of him giving everything I needed as an infant, child, and teen. So I did. I found a picture of a dad on Pinterest holding a little blonde girl that reminds me of me, and I liked the way he looked. I gave him a job, interests, etc. And I've been vividly imagining him treating me the way I wanted, starting with infancy. I have only been doing it for 2 days, but my instinct tells me this is powerful. I do this with bilateral stimulation, tones, or tapping. I want to add that at first I felt guilty. Like bonding with this imaginary man when I have a dad who is trying to engage more and meet more of my needs now that I'm an adult. However, once I got into it, I realized how badly I needed it and stopped feeling guilty. So I have been imagining play, eye contact, telling me how much he loves me, taking care of basic needs, comforting me, etc. My therapist said that it can heal attachment wounds in about 6 months with consistent work. Anyway, I'm excited. It's so emotional, and it feels like my soul needed it badly. I feel like I needed the male figure rather than female adult me doing the nurturing and comforting. Affirmations. A mental well-being technique that we've found resonates well with our audience is that of positive affirmations. In fact, our most visited website page is called 76 Healing Trauma Quotes and Affirmations. Positive affirmations are short, uplifting statements that can help reframe unhelpful thoughts and instill a sense of positivity and calm. Here are 5 you could try. I deserve to be loved and treated well. I have a right to be heard and taken seriously. I am allowed to have feelings. All of my feelings are valid. It can be safe to let others close. Why not stick your favorite on a post-it note somewhere you'll see regularly? Head to our free tools library to download some mindful coloring sheets featuring these quotes and affirmations. 9 signs you're healing trauma. Healing from trauma takes time. For many, it's a lifelong journey of managing symptoms, processing past experiences, and building resilience. Developing new habits of thinking and behaving is hard. Healing is not linear. So, give yourself grace when you make mistakes. Be kind to yourself and acknowledge the effort you're making. Paying close attention to your progress can help you stay motivated in your healing journey. So, without further ado, here are 9 signs that indicate you're healing from trauma. 1. You begin to feel safer in your own body. One of the first signs of healing is feeling more at ease in your own body. Instead of feeling disconnected or on high alert, you experience more moments of calm, and you're no longer as triggered by the sensations in your body. 2. You have better emotional regulation skills. You're able to recognize your emotions more clearly, and you're better at responding to them instead of reacting impulsively. 3. You take your thoughts less seriously. You recognize that thoughts are not facts. You remember that not every thought deserves your full attention. You begin to notice and challenge your brain's negativity bias. 4. You can reflect on your trauma without feeling overwhelmed. As you heal, the emotional intensity tied to past trauma begins to reduce. 5. You feel a stronger sense of trust. You begin to trust others and yourself again. You start to open up to people more easily and allow yourself to form deeper connections. 6. You're quicker to forgive. Whether forgiving yourself or others, you feel less burdened by resentment and more open to letting go of past hurts. You're more focused on collaborative relationship repair and feel committed to building healthier relationships. 7. You feel more comfortable setting boundaries. You say no when you need to, and you're more at ease asserting your needs. 8. You're more hopeful about the future. Your outlook on life becomes increasingly optimistic. You start to see a brighter path ahead. 9. You have a stronger sense of self-compassion. You start to treat yourself with more kindness and compassion, understanding that your trauma was not your fault and that you deserve love and care. Summary. Issues are never resolved once and for all in therapy. Instead, therapist and patient inevitably return again and again to adjust and reinforce the learning. Indeed, for this very reason, psychotherapy has often been dubbed psychotherapy. Irvin Yalom. Perseverance in our efforts to harness neuroplasticity is the sine qua non of rewiring our brains. By persevering in the use of new tools and techniques, we are stabilizing the new neural circuitry so that it can serve as a reliable platform of resilient behaviors, not easily overridden by the pulls of the past. Linda Graham. Above all else, healing from trauma requires your time, patience, and perseverance. As we've heard from the many trauma survivors who shared their experiences for this audiobook, healing is possible. Processing your trauma will help you build your sense of inherent worthiness. With a stronger sense of worthiness, you'll start to establish healthier boundaries and your relationships will improve. With time, you'll begin feeling safer in your own body, with others, and in the world. You have the power to rewire your brain and body. Self-education, trauma-informed therapies, physical movement, breathing and meditation practices, and quality human connection can help you heal. We'll finish this with a wonderful quote from a trauma survivor on the importance of patience, wisdom, and good experiences. Patience to take however long I need to recover, neither falling into apathy or trying to rush through the process. Understanding it may take time to undo the damage that was done, and that it is worth taking the time to heal. Wisdom to recognize where the past holds me back, and when and where I can change to experience healthier relationships with both myself and others. The wisdom to know when I need to push myself for change, and when I need to show compassion to myself and be okay with who I am. The wisdom to know healthy relationships versus unhealthy relationships. Good experiences with others to remind me the world isn't all bad. That abuse is carried out not by an entire group of people, but by individuals who chose, consciously or not, to be that way. And that there are good people out there worth finding. That life can have good experiences out there worth living for and striving for. Good experiences to remind me that there is good in this world, and that I can have good experiences in my life too. Please refer to our ebook for a list of further reading and related tools for each of the four areas we've covered in this audiobook: self-education, trauma-informed therapies, physical movement, breathing and meditation practices, and relational healing. Our ebook also contains website links to many other helpful articles and resources.